Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. My guest today is Emily Schmidt. She is a writer and improviser originally from St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Essentially a very tall, middle-aged woman since birth, Emily spent her childhood watching The Golden Girls and drinking Diet Pepsi with the moms and teachers. She has written for Netflix's No Good Nick and Fox's Welcome to Flatch, which is how we know each other, and she currently writes for CBS's Ghosts. Her favorite t-shirt as a child said, "I'd rather be reading," in huge, aggressive letters, which is just about as confrontational as she gets. And she currently spends her free time cuddling with her pit bull, Stella. Hello!
Hi! Oh, this is so fun!
What are you reading these days?
I'm trying to just read anything. That's a sort of evergreen goal. Oh no. Oh no.
That was a genuine thought. That was a spit take.
Oh no. I'm honored but concerned.
Golly me.
Oh boy.
That's never happened before. But as you said, you're trying to read anything.
Yeah, it really is like an evergreen resolution for me. And to be quite honest, I can't account for my time. I don't know what I'm doing when other people are reading, but I did just transition into audiobooks and allowing myself to consider an audiobook reading.
Good.
Still tough for me though. I still feel like there's an asterisk because I have a pretty long commute, but I just finished All Fours.
Oh, yeah. I was listening to that for a while. And then the loan ended before I finished. What did you think of that one?
It was very intense to the point where like parts of it felt so familiar that it was like vulnerable, like almost uncomfortable, like how familiar parts felt. And then other parts were like so far from my experience that it made me angry. And so I'm still kind of trying to unpack I felt that way about that book, but I'm glad I quote unquote read it. And then right before I did the audiobook of, I think it's her newest one, Barbara Kingsolver's Demon Copperhead.
I haven't read it yet. I have it. I'm really excited to dive in and get it. Everyone who reads her seems to be a huge fan, so I'm excited to enter that world.
You know, I almost picked for this podcast, I almost picked Animal Dreams. Very big for me in like, I think it was my sophomore year of high school, like learning about like archetypes. It just like totally clicked in my head. And like, so I've been like a sort of fan of hers ever since, but I haven't read all of her stuff.
Nice, nice. I found a gorgeous copy of Prodigal Summer once in a used bookstore in New Orleans. And I was like, this is great. Here we go.
That's fate for sure.
And that's why I love used bookstores. You just never know where it'll take you and where you'll end up. Our book today is an entry in the Dear America series called Across the Wide and Lonesome Prairie, starring Hattie Campbell from 1847. A little bit about Dear America. It's a series of diary entry style books from Scholastic that started in 1996. This was the fifth book in the series. It's written by Christiana Gregory. She wrote five Dear Americas, three Royal Diaries, which are the same people, just different, like same publishers, different headings. And this was her second Dear America book. It was the fifth book in the series, came out in 97. There are 36 books total. And something I did not know, nine were turned into movies.
What? I didn't know that. And that kind of changes what I'm doing for the rest of my night, weekend. I don't know. This is huge.
Yeah. And I was looking into Gregory's, like what books she did, because I didn't read Dear America, but I read several of the Royal Diaries books. And so she did Cleopatra, which was, I think, like the big one always felt like.
That was the standout. I think that's the only Royal Diary I dabbled in was Cleopatra. And I was like, this is too intense for me.
The books are intense. I come from a family of historians, and I think what pulled me towards Royal Diaries was like they were recognizable figures. Like I knew Cleopatra. I like, but I don't know. I wasn't continue to be a collector of books more than a reader of books. So I don't know how many I took in.
Yes, of course. They do feel like the young preteen girls collectible book. It's like you've graduated from American Girl. that's child's play. You're moving into exploring real history, and the books looked great on a shelf.
Yes.
And you could get them at the Scholastic Book Fair, which, huge deal. And now that you say it's like 97, I'm like, oh, I was right there when they were coming out. And maybe that's why they were so big for me. But I just remember like getting the
order form.
Yeah. And like circling those books and being like, getting this one. Yeah, it was huge.
I like still remember the tactile feel of the covers. Like you said, it was like moving from American Girl doll like books to these. I also feels like moving maybe from paperbacks to hardbacks.
Yes.
And yes. I know these ones at least had the ribbon bookmark, which
the ribbon was everything and referenced, I think, in a pretty organic way in every book. Like in the diary, the character mentions having the bookmark and it's the same color as the ribbon. And you're like, this is the diary.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you chose this one. It was so fun to dive into. I was looking at some reviews and it seemed like these books sort of like had a reputation for being extremely dark and depressing.
Yes.
Which tracks. I think I was a couple pages into this book and I was like, there's a lot of death already.
This immediately, like not even in a necessary, like we're learning about the Oregon Trail kind of way. I think like within like 5 pages, like her uncle's body comes out of a casket in a river.
Yeah.
That's completely unnecessary and incredibly graphic.
And it really, I got to give it to Christiana, really sets the tone. I know where we're living.
It's a little bit of a trigger warning. It is a problem in and of itself. I think maybe like an actual trigger warning may have been helpful for people, but it's a little bit like, if you can handle this, you'll probably be okay for this book, but get ready to like be sad.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
It's like, if this is bumping you, you can't even get in the covered wagon. Like you are not going to be able to take this journey. And as like a fourth or fifth grader, I was like, give me more.
Yes. So how did this book come into your life? What was the story of your first reading it?
You know, I just remember the mania of Dear America, and I loved American Girl. I had Kirsten was my favorite, but sort of only because my parents said if I was going to get a doll, I'd have to save up myself for it, and I could only get the one that looked like me. Which
that's odd.
Feels inappropriate. And like she was Minnesotan and looked blonde. And I was like, okay. So I like, you know.
A little on the nose of them, but sure.
Yeah. And then my younger sister, though, she got 2 dolls for Christmas. She got Josefina. She got ones that didn't at all look like her. And that was somehow, anyway, I'm definitely over that. And that's fine. I was like really into history and stories of girls and like, all my like hyperfixations, like my young girl hyperfixations were just like historical moments. Like, I feel like I went through like a Titanic phase and then like learned about the Holocaust and was like, oh my God, I need to know every single thing about this tragedy. Like, I just really couldn't get enough of those stories. And then felt like Dear America entered my life. And I was like, here we go.
Like a perfect match. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've always been sort of like fascinated by the Oregon Trail or like drawn to those stories. I feel like I still kind of am. So I feel like it was an interesting moment for like everyday women.
Yeah.
That were like forced into a really hard, terrible journey just with this promise of like a better home at the end of it. And so this one really stood out to me. And this one is so visual and so descriptive. And I just really like tried to put myself in this character's shoes. And
yeah. Yeah. This book follows Hattie and her family. Hattie's, I think, 13. Cause I know there's a moment where she says, well, my 14-year-old friend is old enough to get married. So why can't I get married at 13?
Oh, that was a shocking part of the reread. I remember her little friend Pepper. And then, oh no, Pepper married a 17-year-old, but I hated that.
But I was glad that Pepper, who is Hattie's best friend on this trip, I was glad that Pepper married someone who's also a teenager, and that there's a woman who, or a girl, that's a critical part, a girl who is tangentially mentioned, who gets married to a widower who has like six kids. And
yeah,
I think, like you said, this book does not pull its punches in terms of talking about sort of not only the realities of the trail. I think that was something I really liked, was the details of like there was one detail of like putting axle grease on your lips because they're so chapped.
And you know, it's so funny you mention that, because whenever I remembered this book, I thought the title was my lips are so chapped, they're cracked and bleeding or something. I like thought that was the title of this book. So I was like, when you asked me to do the podcast, I was like Googling, I'm like, that was the title. But no, that was just a very descriptive part of the book.
It's that they get cracked, and then while you're walking, the dust gets in them. It sticks to the stickiness of it.
Listen, Christiana put us there.
She did. But you saying that about the title is so funny, because I think one of the same author's other books from Dear America that did get made into a movie is it's about the American Revolution, and it's something like The Winter of Snow Blood.
Yes. Yes. And I was actually looking at the different titles today, and there's one, it was just called I Walk with Dread, the story of like Deliverance Tempest or something. And it's like about the Salem witch trials. And my very first thought was like, I want to read that as an adult. And I probably already read it as like an 8-year-old.
I think the Dear America covers, the girls look sad. They look like they are suffering.
They are not. Well, American Girl, again, they're like sort of smiling. Even on like Kirsten Saves the Day, she's like clearly experiencing a crisis, but you know she's going to be okay. These covers, some of these girls, you're like, she may die in the end.
Yes. I'm thinking again about the uncle in the casket going into the river, which is, I mean, a great opening, a great image, kind of funny, which I loved.
Yeah.
And I think also, like you said, a brilliant sort of way to set the tenor of it, because we don't even see him die. This is all aftermath. Hattie has lost like three sisters that have already died.
That's right.
The whole book, she's like, I have two little brothers and I need to make sure they live.
I got to hang on to them. She even says like, Mama is sad to leave my sisters. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're at boarding school or something. And it's like, no, they're in the ground.
Yeah. I thought they were married. I was like, they must like live in town. Right.
Yeah. No. They're not taking the trip. No, they're buried. They just died of a fever.
It is. I don't want to leave their bones. Yeah. They start in Missouri and they end up in Oregon, and the diary takes place over the course of it while she goes with her mother and two brothers and father and some fellow travelers. But I'm glad that we started talking about sort of fixation with Oregon Trail, because I wanted to know sort of what role did it play? Kind of like, what was Oregon Trail, Manifest Destiny, Donner Party, which is mentioned in here? How did that come across through school, just to you? What was it like?
I've actually tried to think about why I fixated on it. And like, truly still, I'm like looking for ways to write those stories, even though I'm like a comedy writer. I'm like, I don't know what the intersection will be for me, but I feel like I will write a story in that world. But I don't know specifically what it was. I don't think it was school. It may have been Laura Ingalls.
Okay, yeah.
And just the idea of like homesteading and like Minnesota, and my half sister, who was much older than me, sort of got me into Laura Ingalls stuff. And then because I grew up in Minnesota, we took little trips to see the places mentioned in the books. And I think that was exciting to me. And just this idea of having to go with your whole family on this like perilous journey, just across the country. I really, unfortunately, didn't think too much about the implications of this like horrible sort of migration, like what it did to people that were already there and all of that, until I was older. And when I was a kid, it just was this like fantastical journey with like peril around every.
Yeah.
I got into the Oregon Trail game.
Right.
And I had a version that had like live action images, like real images. I don't know what version it was, but like if you got bit by a snake, like a real image of a snake would come on the screen and be like, you're dead. And that was really like evocative for me. I'm on this. And I just used to love making up stories in general. And so I would create Oregon Trail families and just
slaughter.
But of course, like now as an adult and as like even, you know, junior high, high school person, was more aware of the very dark side of the Oregon Trail in general. And I think now as, like, I read a book recent in the last couple of years about the Donner Party.
Yeah.
And it really just reminded me that, like, people are dumb. Like, people have just always been morons. Like, we're still morons. And just the very bad decisions that people made, like they weren't a different type of people from us these days. It was like, oh, the people that you have like road rage with on the highway were like also doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I have been thinking a lot about history lately. And I like that you mentioned, I think there is a serious lack of like historical comedies in the scripted entertainment space, and I don't like it. I think it should change. But there's even, I think, a line somewhere that Hattie says about like why, and it appears frequently on this podcast, of like children understanding that adults are hiding things from them.
Yes.
And so I think the appeal of these books that even like have a reputation for being so dark is that it like starts to scratch that itch, I think.
Yes.
And I think that moment is, there's a moment where Pepper and Hattie are talking and Hattie asks, what is it like to be married? And Pepper just sort of like smiles. And there's an implication of like, oh, Pepper has had sex now. She knows what sex is like, which only gets weirder the older and farther away you get from it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It happens again with the other like teen bride where she's like, I asked her about marriage and she just blushed.
Yes.
I wish all these girls would stop blushing and just tell me.
Just tell me. I thought that was so accurate. Yeah.
Yes. And I know, listen, I don't know Christiana, but I do feel like I know her. And I bet there was a chapter that she took out that was a graphic understanding of sex for Hattie.
Yeah. Yeah, I really wonder what gets left on the, you know, drawing board. I have so many questions about like the behind the scenes of these books. And like, I wonder like if they have a list of subjects and you get to choose or you're just assigned. Like my mom for a while was writing sort of like textbooks and would just sort of get assigned things. So she's like, I'm spending the next 6 months writing about space military weapons, and then we're just going to move on, you know?
Yeah.
So I really wonder what that is like. But I love what you said, like, people have always been people and will always continue to be people. And I think that's such an important lesson. And I think these books are such a great way to get kids interested in history because it is just normal people.
Yeah. And it really, I always felt like no matter who the protagonist was of any of the Dear Americas that I was reading, I saw myself in that character. Like, I feel like the authors, yeah, I don't know what that process is or like if they just crank these out or if like a ton of research goes in or what, but they do a really good job accessing that like early teen girl spirit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, I have had these exact feelings. And no, my biggest mistake wasn't poisoning small children with hemlock like Hattie did, but like, oh, I forgot to turn in that homework assignment and I felt the same thing.
Yeah. And what's so interesting is that Hattie really works through a lot of emotional conundrums in like pretty explicit ways that I think give a child reader really good like structure to process and understand things, because even though she is dealing with, like you said, hemlock, it's a very big sequence in this where she accidentally kills a couple children. Wild, by the way.
You're like, they must get better. And then it's like, we buried Cassia. And you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, like, I really Wade is Pepper and Wade are twins, and Wade is the romantic interest for Hattie throughout the book. And Wade survives after a coma of several days. And I was surprised that that choice was made, that Wade got to live. I really didn't think so.
Honestly, I like couldn't remember what happened to him, which was fun because yeah, I was really along for the ride. And I was like, the way this book is going, he's like unable to speak or really move. And he just kind of like grinds his jaw. I was like, she's going to marry him like this. That I feel like that's what Christiana's going to do to Hattie. Like,
yes.
She'll be like, and I care for Wade very deeply. And I could tell in his eyes that he loved me too. And luckily, no, he like,
he seems fine. Yeah.
Although if you read the epilogue,
I don't remember. Oh, they can't have kids, right? They can't have
kids. And I'm like, is this hemlock related?
You're so right. Because I read that and I was like, yeah, you go through the Oregon Trail. It's like a dice toss to see if you're like still going to be able to do that. But you're so right. I bet that is it. Damn.
And then she just had to like pack it full of sadness, because even at the end where they're experiencing some joy and talking about like twins that were born on the trail, in the epilogue, it's like Wade and Hattie adopt those twins because their parents die in a buggy accident.
Yes.
This is unnecessary. What are you doing? Like, that's just got to pack in as much trauma as possible.
I forgot about that part, but that I think is so, there's a brutality from the author's perspective of like doing this to children. And also, sometimes you survive the Oregon Trail and get hit in a car accident.
Yeah.
And like, I was going through my notes earlier, and it is sort of a minor moment, but there's a moment where a kid dies just because someone else's gun went off. Like, there's absolute like randomness to the violence, to mortality. It was really astonishing. Yeah.
I really feel like I should have kept like a body count in this
book,
because honestly, it's shocking for a book for children. It's unbelievable. You've got a kid falling off a wagon and being crushed by mules, and they don't.
Yes.
You've got the Mrs. Big character is fascinating.
Yes. Say so, more.
Morbidly obese woman. She makes like a point of that.
Many times. Yeah.
Her husband has no legs.
He has a little cart that he pulls himself.
And they're driving a wagon. And at some point, like, she befriends this woman. And there's a whole thing with that other Mrs. Kenker or whatever.
Yes.
But at some point towards the end of the journey, Mrs. Big falls off the wagon and drowns. And Hattie is just like, I can't get the image of this drowning woman out of my mind. And you're like, great, I'm an 8-year-old. Now I can't get this image of a drowning woman.
Yeah. And Mrs. Big, there's some unkind remarks right away of like, her name really suits her. And Hattie really falls in love with these people. And I think what's interesting is how quickly, and it feels accurate, but how quickly Hattie turns on people, of how quickly she's like, and I love her now. And if anyone says anything mean, I'm coming around to the wagon.
Yes.
And there's a lot of admiration for that dynamic between Mrs. Big and her husband, of how they take care of each other. And I think it's, they're fording a river when Mrs. Big dies, and it's fairly near the end. They're almost there. And I think like Mr. Big is about to fall out because he doesn't have any legs. And Mrs. Big goes to save him, I think, and falls in.
It's unbelievable. And it's written so matter of fact and just very brief. In a different type of like movie, for example, that would be part of like a huge set piece. And I feel like in this book, it was just simply half a page. And like, they never found Mrs. Big's body, and Hattie had like zero closure. But I guess that is life, and that is what happened. But yeah, it is like shocking to, you know, Christiana's not sugarcoating anything for anyone.
No, it is brutal. And I think like the only sort of saving grace is that nothing really happens to Hattie other than psychological torment she has a couple bodies on her back. She has a body count as a 13-year-old. She has these huge problems, and then also is like, why like isn't Wade asking me to dance?
Yes. And that felt so right for like a teen girl, because it just took me back to like my diary and like my junior high diary. I had like a 9/11 entry and it just started with OMG. And like,
as it should,
the ultimate OMG. But I would like talk about the war in Iraq, or, and obviously I'm not like enduring it. I'm like sitting in suburban Minnesota, but still like hearing of these like tragic things that happen, and then flipping to like, there's like a school dance that I am scared to go to or something. Yeah. And it's just that flip felt very accurate in this book.
Yeah. I was really struck by how much responsibility Hattie takes for her mother and how her mother feels.
Yes.
Everything dealing with Hattie's mother really broke my heart, because there's so much about her mother doesn't really want to come on the trip. Like you said, she doesn't want to leave this home that she had with her children. And there's so many little parts of like, she won't dance and like participate in the dance until they get to Oregon. She says like, no, we get to Oregon and we're still not celebrating because our house isn't built yet. And there's, I think it's like one of the last lines of the book before the epilogue where she's like, yeah, mom is dancing. And that really hit me in a very personal place.
Totally. And I feel like that's also an interesting component of just like Oregon Trail stories, is it feels like the older I get, the more I realize it's like, just sort of the whims of men seeking adventure, seeking a quote unquote better life, sort of buying the line of like promised land, like hook, line, and sinker, and being like, we're going, and the wives being like, can you explain how? Like, in does any part of this seem like it makes sense? Do we have animals? Do we like, do you have, what are you going to use for a wagon? And they're like, we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Even when like they stop to cross a river and all the men are like kind of debating and almost like posturing, like, how are we going to cross this? And I have a better idea than you. And the women just sort of having to wait and then ultimately like sort of drown.
Yeah.
Like, such an interesting theme that I feel like is present in almost every story about the Oregon Trail.
Yeah. I think Hattie's aunt is pregnant throughout most of the book. The aunt gives her the diary, but is sort of a peripheral character. But anytime she's brought up, I have to go like, oh, and she's doing this pregnant.
Yes. And if that weren't worse or bad enough, she literally gives birth like in a river.
Yes. Like while Mrs. Big is drowning. Yeah.
Yes. Which, that's interesting. Mrs. Big is drowning and that baby is being born. But honestly, like, I had to read it quickly because it was stressing me out. Yeah. It was like, the wagon was filling up with water and she was having a baby. I was like, this woman didn't deserve this. Why is this happening?
Yeah. And then it's sort of like, well, that probably happened, you know?
Yeah.
It, so many times, I think for so many reasons that are fairly obvious, this book reminded me of Grapes of Wrath, which is like, exactly. And there's, I mean, thank God this went a different way. And I wonder if it was on purpose. But in the end of that book, their sister, who's been pregnant this whole time, gives birth. The baby is stillborn. And then they just put it, like, there's this giant flood and they just put it in the water and it just goes away.
Oh, that's, yeah. I honestly, every time we were introduced to an idea that was, had a little bit of joy in it, i.e. Aunt June is pregnant, I'm like, that baby's dying.
Yes. There's a line that Pepper says, like, I wish I could just put my head down and sleep forever. And I was like, oh, Pepper's going to die.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Pepper shouldn't wish that. That means Pepper has like typhoid fever.
Exactly. Her days are numbered. Or Pepper was going to get pregnant. Oh, my God.
That was the other thing. Like, the way they just, again, couldn't really delve into, like, Christiana gave us a big old plate full of death. But she couldn't delve into other subjects like sex and pregnancy, because at one point Pepper is like not feeling well and Hattie's mom is like, oh, I think we'll find out why. And it's, she was pregnant. And I'm like, oh, that's a pregnant 14-year-old. I don't know how I feel about
it. Yeah. Who is malnourished, almost certainly, definitely dehydrated, cannot be well.
No. And, her and lips I think are filled with trail dirt.
Axle grease. Yeah. And the sad thing is, like, there's that is introduced. And then a couple chapters later, Hattie's like, I don't even care anymore. It doesn't even smell bad anymore. Even the headings of the entries go from like July 4th, Wednesday, to like, it's been, I don't know how many days. I've lost track while later.
It'll be like another Saturday. Someone's baby fell off the wagon. You're like, oh my God.
Exactly. And there's a quote when you were talking about men sort of making these decisions and the women just having to literally sit and wait. There's a line where I think they're talking, and this is 62% of the way through the book. I have an ebook, and they're talking. There's a point where everyone gets to, and they're like, this is habitable. Like, let's think about stopping here. And it says, Pa said he's had too many dreams that were lost or forgotten, or that he just gave up on. This is a dialogue. This is our last chance, Augusta, to fulfill a dream as big as Oregon. Please stand by me.
Oh, I mean, listen, we've heard it before. This is an unhinged man having a personal crisis, and he's bringing everyone along for the ride. And they just have to say yes, because he has this sort of vague dream. And they're like, well, okay, I guess we're going to keep going.
Yeah. And that, like, I see that as silly. And yet I'm like, is that all of human history? Yes. I mean, we're both here in LA following a dream, you know?
This is true. Perhaps I'm being too hard on the fathers of the Oregon Trail.
No, because we're not asking anyone to risk life and limb.
Yeah. I think it is in all of us. It is like human nature to want to see what is out there for themselves and see what's possible. And there's always this idea of like something around, could be something better right around the corner. And I feel like these days it's like, yeah, maybe like moving to LA, or even like, oh, maybe I'll move to the West Side or something. And then for these people, it was like, I'm going to take a 6-month journey and half my family's going to die and my son's going to be temporarily paralyzed.
Yeah. The Oregon Trail did not come up a lot in school for me. And I grew up on the East Coast. So it was a lot of like, we focus way more on the Civil War because the Civil War was like fought there. We had Manifest Destiny. That was certainly covered. And I mean, there's so much. We live in a fascinating place because, and maybe this is everywhere else also, but our country's conception of itself, its understanding of itself, it is like such a character that impacts everything.
Yes. It feels like when you talk about like American culture, like for better or worse, like that is a huge part of it, of like, I could be that rich guy tomorrow. Like,
yeah, it's dreams. Yeah.
Yes. And you look at all these like lovely European countries that take like 2-hour lunches and are not like held down by the chains of capitalism. And it's just like, sorry, that's like baked into America. It's like baked into our economy, but it's also baked into our like frame of thinking.
I think that's something that like every once in a while it comes back into my memory of like, the original settlers of this country left because people were being like too happy and too relaxed. We are founded by religious extremists, which also comes up in this book. We're shadowing the Mormons as they go through.
That was eerie. I mean, maybe it's just because I just watched the season premiere of Sister Wives, but to have the Mormons like just across the river and this sort of presence. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell if we were supposed to think they were good or bad.
Yeah. There's a hired leader who's leading the journey. And there's a line that he says about the Mormons that I pulled out and I still don't know what to do with, where he goes, don't judge a man by how strict he keeps his rules.
Yeah. It's really hard to figure out, how we're supposed to feel about that. It's just, it feels like those are just words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Christiana had a whole chapter on Mormons and Scholastic was like, listen, we can't.
That's a demographic.
They have a lot of kids. They have a lot of girls that could be reading these books. Because then they also said there were only like two children.
Yes, it was like all men and like one woman, which I thought was perplexing because I think from the outside of, I'm not Mormon, is polygamy. I feel like that's one of the big headlines.
It was very confusing. And as a kid, I'm sure I just like breezed right past it. But as an adult that knows a little bit about the Mormons, I'm like, this is weird, and I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, I think if I had read it then, it's like, oh, my friend is a Mormon, and they have like a huge temple that's very pretty. And yeah, like that was kind of it.
Yeah, but to have like only two children and she doesn't ever meet them, but they talk about wanting to meet them.
Where I think like someone from there wanders over while they're yes, walking. There's like a very brief interaction. I think Hattie, especially, it's a more prevalent thing with Native Americans, but continues to come to the conclusion, I mean, that we've said of like people are people. Everyone's pretty much the same.
Yeah. She's like, some people are good. Some people are bad, no matter what group of people. Yeah. Yeah. I think she felt the same about the Mormons. It just left me with more questions though.
Yeah. There's a lot of, yeah, again, it makes me go back to like the making of these books of if she gets a list of like, make sure to touch on the Mormons and make sure to get this name. And there's a few things where it's like, she mentions a pamphlet written by Kit Carson that I was like, oh, there's a worksheet for that. You know, there's something tied in there.
Oh, totally. I'm actually surprised there isn't like some form of workbook in the back because there are like some pictures. There's a recipe for Johnny cakes. And I think the some sheet music to Skip to Maloo.
Classic.
In the back of the book. Or you can, I guess, like continue your like edutainment. I'm honestly surprised there's not like some sort of little workbook.
I was on Christiana's website earlier today, and she has study guides for all of her many, many books. And it seems like she's written a lot about the Oregon Trail, or at least homesteading. She has something called the Prairie River Series, the Cabin Creek Mysteries, American Gold Rush.
Do I reach out to her? Do I become friends with her?
I think you should. She seems very nice.
Yeah. Listen, maybe we become friends with Christiana and really get sort of the inside scoop because this came from her brain and I would just really love to speak to her.
Especially because I've got a couple suggestions. If you're still doing Dear America books, I have some ideas.
What would you do? What would you do differently?
Well, this is crossing into Royal Diaries.
Sure.
But I have a big history with the Girl Scouts, just in general. And
I
so,
do as well.
Oh my gosh. So I went to college in Savannah and I worked at the Julia Gordon Low birthplace. I was a tour guide.
Incredible. That's awesome.
So I worked there. I was in college for screenwriting. And I, at one point, I had a friend who was a tour guide at the founder of the Girl Scouts father-in-law's house museum.
Great. Great.
And I said, that place is stuffy. Come over here. Like, come work over here. So we were working on like a crowned, the crown-esque like mini series about Julia Gordon Low because she has a fascinating life. That's also like malnutrition during the Civil War because they starved the city out.
Yes.
Like medical malpractice with her ears. Like one after another after another.
I'm into it. Like intense trauma after trauma. Let's go there. I visited that exact museum, mm-hmm. her home, her childhood home.
They did a really big, I graduated in 2019 and they did a huge renovation right after, like around, I think it was during the pandemic. I think that ended up kind of working out for them. And I went about a year ago. If you're ever in the area, they really did a great job. And there's, when I was there in my final months, they were working on sort of building up to this big renovation. Like they were just so careful to say, like, we want every Girl Scout, no matter where she comes from, no matter what kind of ability she has, no matter who she is, we want this museum to be accessible to her.
Love that.
There was just so much care. Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah, it was very big for me to visit that when I was younger. I think I was like 8 when I got to go there, which feels like just the perfect age.
Yeah. they brought in this group that was, their job was specifically to talk to museums in different places about how to meet the needs of people who are disabled. And I remember I was walking to work that morning and I didn't know who these people were, but I passed them and they were like grading the sidewalk of like, this does not have a good good divot here for wheelchairs. We gotta make a note of that.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I was like, that's really nice, actually. It seems like nitpicking, but it's a lot of care. There's like in the new version of the museum, they have a room that's like, if you're overstimulated, go sit here and calm down and then you can come back. They're just trying to think of everyone. And it's so beautiful. Yeah.
That's really thoughtful.
I have my little notes here. Something that, again, like it's one of those details, like the axle grease is the mosquito cakes.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
They are making their little morning like cakes, like pancakes or whatever the version is on the Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
And like mosquitoes keep getting in it and she's trying to pick them out. And I think at some point her mom says like, just leave them. Like, just leave them.
Just eat them. Like it's some protein. And it's crazy because that happens early on and you're like, oh, I like pancakes too. That's fun. They ate pancakes. And then that detail comes in and you're like, oh no, she ruined her pancakes. It's like, no, buckle the fuck up because you're reading a book about kids that are going to be eating like mosquito filled pancakes every day. Like this is just the beginning.
Yeah. There's another moment later on where she's like, I don't even notice them anymore, which I think is a great point as an author to be like, this is still happening, by the way, lest you forget.
In case you forgot, this is still a huge part of the story. And this is another little thing she's enduring every day.
Every day.
I'm really curious what you thought of that Mrs. Is it Kenker?
Kenker, maybe Kenkler. Yes. The older woman. Maybe. I don't. We can.
Well, that was also rude because she's like, she's so old. She's 50. And I'm like,
it was harsh. There is an old woman and an older couple who is on the prairie trying with them. And Hattie realizes that the wife is stealing little things here and there. And wants to tell, but keeps saying, like, it'll upset mom, and I don't want to, she's already stressed enough, like, I don't want to sort of rock the boat at all, and ends up telling, I think, her Aunt June, and multiple times people are like, I know that's wrong, and I know you're upset, but, like, she's got issues, and if it means, like, a missing spoon here or there, that's on her. It was very casual.
Yes. And it just was like an interesting way to explain manifestation of grief to a kid.
Yeah.
Because you learn that they were going to travel with their like adult sons. And I don't know if they fell off a roof. I don't, something happened where the sons died right before they were going to make this journey. And so this quote unquote elderly, I think mid-50s couple, decide to go by themselves and need a lot of help. And she's just like straight up like a kleptomaniac. Yeah. She's just stealing from everyone and her wagon's too full. And the leader is like, you got to dump this, and she won't. And Patty even talks to Mrs. Big about it, who was like, let it go. Just let it happen. And I thought it was like an opportunity for more trauma that Christiana could have forced upon us, but she didn't.
Yeah, well.
That's not true.
So there's a great line, I think, from Mrs. Big where it says something like, maybe every time she like steals something, she like fills something within herself.
Yes.
Reading it, sometimes when you're reading a children's book, you have to be like, okay, this is a little annoying, but I understand. And this was a little past that. Mrs. Kanker did get on my nerves. This is a lot. Or maybe I was just like, Hattie's moralizing a lot and I just need to get to pet this doll to me. I don't know. But at some point, Mrs. Kanker is found out. And I think it's like you were saying, there's just too much stuff in their wagon and they need to forge something. And I don't even remember the specific thing that prompts it, but Mr. Kenker gets discovered and just jumps off a cliff.
I mean, my God. It also, again, happens so abruptly.
Yeah.
Sort of having this conflict because Mrs. Kenker steals Mr. Big's little makeshift wheelchair.
I forgot that part,
Legs, and then it's like everyone has to come together and make a little cart for him. I'm like, this is like bonus trauma that's happening right now. Like, and basically, yes, she's discovered, I think maybe when the wagon tips or something. And then everyone's like, my stuff. Yeah. Mr. Kenker's like, I'm going to go for a swim. And he jumps in to like rushing rapids.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's just another one where it's like that happened and, you know, we got to keep moving.
Yeah. And they're like, she'll catch up if she wants to still be a part of it. And like Mrs. Kanker is just like wailing, trying to like drive this heavy wagon that has tipped over. Her husband's dead. She's like in the back of the train. But there, I don't even feel like there's an appropriate like redemption arc, because there's a little bit of redemption when they get to Oregon and they're having like a Christmas party and Hattie doesn't want Mrs. Kanker to come. And her mom's like, no, we have to invite her. And then she's like literally invited to this party, but still shunned.
Everyone gets to Oregon and they are not talking to Mrs. Kanker. She's like living in a tent. Yes.
Which is almost worse than like having it out on the prairie and being like, stop stealing our shit.
Yeah.
Instead, they let her do all of that. Her husband dies. She's allegedly elderly, gets to Oregon, and they completely ignore her, which is like more devastating. And then Hattie, like, again, has like two belongings, like her grandmother's spoon. And she gives her the spoon. It actually isn't satisfying to me. All of it is still incredibly sad.
Yeah. That part, I think, you asked what I make of it. I thought while I was reading it, I thought it was annoying. And then when it resolved, it's not resolved. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe there are going to be people in your life that you just have to say, you know, not my monkeys, not my circus. But they're stealing from your circus.
And like, you don't have hardly anything. Your circus is on fire. Yeah. And everyone died. And it really felt, I mean, granted, you know how it goes when they're loading those wagons at the beginning of the journey. You're like, hey, P.S., you're dumping that.
Yeah.
You think you're bringing this precious calico dress. It's going on the side of the road in Nebraska. So you already know that. But she was stealing things that were like, she was stealing like children's sweaters.
Yeah, that was so crazy. She's at one point knitting something and Hattie is like, that is the yarn from my brother's sweater that she unraveled. And it's like blatant. It's like in front of them.
And that man's like wheelchair. You're like, what? But again, you don't get that satisfying, like, duke it out. You know, she doesn't get to defend herself. She doesn't get to, like, explode with grief about her sons and say the thing that Mrs. Big said to Hattie about, like, filling a hole. Instead, she's just shunned and, like, she's never happy again, that character.
Yeah. I was kind of expecting a turn of, like, well, we all made it here and we're starting a new life. So we need to like come together as a community and uplift her. And that wasn't really there either. It was sort of like, we let her be here.
It felt honestly unsettling. It was supposed to be this like Christmas time at the end of a book. And again, at the end of like a young adult / children's book, and you're still left in empty sadness. And then you hear, oh, our protagonist couldn't have kids. And instead, like this adoption of these twins.
These like orphaned twins.
Yeah, you're like, okay, I guess you could say that's a happy ending. Even at the very end, these are fictional characters and we're hearing like what happens to them in the future. At the very end, it was like Aunt June's granddaughter, they make a note to say like, survived the terrible fire and earthquake of San Francisco. You're like, oh, my God, that's the last line of the epilogue. That is, okay, you're introducing a new tragedy.
Yeah, which I think is kind of, and I don't know if there is one, but it feels kind of like shameless promotion of like, and in the next, dear America.
Christiana's like laying the groundwork. She's going to keep herself employed. Mm-hmm. She's like, by the way,
there is a Dear America wiki that's very detailed. And Hattie is supposedly the descendant, I think, of one of the characters in the winter of the snow is so bloody.
Oh my God. This is incredible. The way this is going to be my life for a few days is a little bit not okay.
There are 36 of these books out there.
I truly wonder how many I've read. I would say I've read at least 28 is going to be my guess. I bought all of them and they were everything to me. I think probably because they were so chock full of trauma. And I sort of have that reputation, unfortunately, of like bringing up true but upsetting facts like people need to know.
I'm right there with you. I have friends who like make fun of me for how often I bring this up, but there is like a detail. I've brought it up on this podcast before. When the Romanovs were fleeing the Bolsheviks, the women sewed jewels into their corsets.
Yes.
It was like bulletproof vest. Yeah.
Which honestly would be like sort of a fun story if they didn't all still die. That's like the part that like, you're like, I'm really sorry, but sometimes interesting facts are accompanied by trauma. And that's just how that goes.
And I was looking earlier today and it didn't click until now. There isn't Anastasia, Royal Diaries.
Royal Diaries.
How do they deal with that?
I mean, if this book is any indication, they go full force into the death and sad.
The last entry is like, they're taking us into a basement. I can't.
Oh, I'm positive that's what it is. That's crazy. But you know what? Those stories made us stronger and have more things to share.
There is so much merit in this book. Absolutely. There's some interesting sort of philosophy statements near the end. There's one that I wrote down where it's, we must put the past behind us. And I'm sure that's in reference, maybe even tangentially, to Kanker. There's also a moment right near the end here. It's from Ma. In order to move on, we must forgive the past. Sometimes that means forgiving someone who hasn't apologized and probably never will. We don't have to forget what happened.
Oh, shit.
That's, that's a pretty intense lesson to learn as a child. But that is what happened with Mrs. Kanker. Mm-hmm. They didn't forget. That's why she's living in a tent.
I also think that's like, I don't know if I agree with it, but I know that anger and resentment gets very heavy to carry. But I really like that. I think there's a degree of like practicality in terms of talking about Kanker, where even Hattie is like, I don't want to upset people. Like, I don't want to make this hard thing even harder and like more dramatic.
Yes. It also feels interesting in relation to that character that it wasn't a story of people being withholding or that people were, that they wouldn't have shared with this woman if she had asked, because there's this huge emphasis too on like community. Mm-hmm. And her mom is like, granted, I think she says it like dead eyed. She's like, why have four Dutch ovens when we can all share one or something? And they really, even in the last scene, their little Christmas dinner, it lasts a very long time because they only have like four spoons just in their community.
Yeah.
And like took turns eating from the same utensils and kind of like did it in shifts. So it's this interesting thing of like for Hattie to observe, like, yes, it's wrong that that woman is stealing and like we would help her if she asked. And that's also why we're not saying any. I don't know. It just, it was an interesting comment on like society or like community when things are hard, like what really matters and like what, like people's true colors coming through.
Yeah. And I think it was interesting to both say, like, sometimes you have to just let that go and let that happen. And to pair it with that line of, we don't have to forget what happened.
Yeah. Which is, honestly feels like every, I don't know, hardened ancestor in like my family, that feels very right. I'm like, oh, they endured like incredible traumas. They've like had to move on because they had to, but like, it's still in their eyes.
Yeah.
They will never forget what they saw and what happened.
Yeah. It does feel like when your parents just drop a random bit of like something extremely traumatizing from their childhood that you've never heard about. And then they're just like, what do you want for dinner tonight?
Yeah. Cause that is always with them. And it's like not the same thing, but my great grandma, my dad's grandma was like a child of the circus and was basically orphaned when she was 5 and just sent to live with, I guess, distant relatives in Minnesota who like didn't really want her to be there. Mm. And when my dad was growing up, he and his siblings would always ask her to tell stories of the circus. And she like never would talk about her childhood, but she would teach them tricks. Like she would teach them how to like run on a barrel or like balance on the back of a chair. And like, cause she used to ride on horseback standing up when she was like 4 years old. And so it's like, okay, this happened. And there's a memory there, but like, we're not going to unpack the trauma.
Yeah, 100%. My grandfather will not talk about his father and that side of the family. But at the same time, my grandfather is a historian. So like studies and knows how to research and get all this depth and stuff. But there's stories that we won't tell.
Yeah.
And I think that's so fascinating.
It's interesting. Yeah. It was such a pleasure to read it again. And now I'm like, am I just going to read all the Dear America books? Is that going to be the thing I read this year? Is that? I mean, maybe. It was a delight.
Yeah, why not? And I think it's also like a good starting point to be like, actually, maybe I want to know more about the Oregon Trail and read or listen to like a nonfiction book about that. Or like,
yes. Yes.
Understand more about the Donner Party. Or just there's, I think the merit of these for young kids and even older is it's a starting point to ask exactly. So many. It like is such a reward for curiosity, I think.
And like such a clear like way in. I feel like these books are the books that I recommend to people's kids. I'm like, oh my gosh, like your daughter is gonna love Dear America. Like really, even though it's like filled with adult themes of death, it feels right for like a certain type of kid. Like this is the perfect book.
Yeah. The kid who like doesn't go out to recess. 100%. And I was that kid. Yeah.
Yep. I was that kid as well who like fills their reading log, like the back page too, where it's like, you didn't actually need to do this and you didn't need to write it down and look at, okay, here's your gold star. And you're like, just give me all the books.
Yes. Just inhale them. It did feel like a huge blind spot in my reading to not have covered this. I know when I have like posted about this podcast and said like, what's really impactful, this series came up. I think the one that came up at least once that I remember is the Titanic one.
Oh my God. Yes. That one, again, horrific and incredible. It's that one's very good.
I think the success of these is that it's a way to contextualize and start your way into, it's such a good way to be like, I learned about Oregon Trail in history and yeah. I want to learn more. Here's a book. Like it's a, and I think the other great part of these books is that they address that need of like, I know things are bad and things are heavy and dark and I need to understand them to feel equipped.
Yes, because you are seeing someone around your age that you can identify with dealing with really hard themes. And granted, it's like on a level 1,000 to what I was dealing with, certainly, but it is a way to... yeah, do hard things and learn like coping skills.
Exactly.
And it felt authentic. It wasn't like stories about like, oh, I'm like going to the mall to see my crush. Like, that's not what I was going to relate to. I was going to relate to a girl on the Titanic.
Yeah. And I think sometimes you have to go a little bit farther away to see the truths that apply to yourself. Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It is Coping Skills, the series. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Truly, like I know what I'm doing after this and it's, I don't know, not something a 35-year-old woman should necessarily be doing. And that's finding these Dear America movies. It's trying to reach out to Christiana. This is the rest of my night.
Good. And I think, I mean, that brings us to the question of the podcast. Do you consider it required reading?
You know, I do. Maybe not this book, but this series, I feel like you have to find the one that speaks to you.
Yeah.
Feels like required reading. And again, it is the book I recommend to like girls, especially ages like 8 to 11.
Yeah. A kid who's like really taken an interest in like history or English. I agree. Like, I don't know about this one in particular, but on the whole, I think as a series, it has so much value. Like I don't even know what the phrase I'm looking for is, but it's like calorie dense. It's like,
yes, you're going to learn real facts about history in a way that feels very organic. You're going to see how a teen girl copes with hard things, both big and small, and comes out on top in a way that feels not like you're being pandered to. Like, yeah. Hattie could have died at any point in this book, and it would have just been like, yep, diary over. Like,
yeah.
The reader would get it, would understand why this character died. But yeah, so it feels, I felt very like grown up reading these books too. It felt like, it felt like these could have been adult books because yeah, I wasn't being pandered to.
I'm so glad I read it. Yeah, it's just for how dark it is, even with that, it's so fun.
It's really great. You really look for those little moments of joy. You got to look for the pancake around the mosquitoes. You'll find it.
Is there anything you'd like to plug as we round out?
Oh my gosh. Ghosts is coming back. Our fourth season premiere is on October 17th.
Oh, perfect.
You can find that on CBS or Paramount Plus. It's going to be a really fun season. It's been really fun to work on.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. That's going to be so good. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
Thank you so much to Emily. You can check out her work on Ghosts or, so silly, so crazy. Watch Welcome to Fletch. And if you don't get the joke, I was on that show. I was on that show. Next week, I'm not sure what we're covering. Everyone's schedules are just crazy these days, but it might be Jurassic Park. Actually, just in terms of the calendar date, it cannot be Jurassic Park. But that's on its way. All right. Yeah, is that it? I think that's it. All right. You can support the podcast on buymeacoffee.com/required reading. I would very much love it and appreciate it. If you include your address when you do that, I'll send you some bookmarks and a thank you note, handwritten. I've been told my handwriting is very pretty. You can find me everywhere at Aaron R. Bowles. The R stands for... Oh, I was... Ricochet? I was going to sing? Not today. That's some days, but not today. All right, bye!